This podcast is about spoilers and discussion. It's also about spooky stuff. You know, any film that we talk about here, we recommend you see in advance. You've been warned.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
The horror. There is no shortage of monsters to haunt our dreams.
The horror.
You got red on you.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
The horror.
Alive, it's alive.
Groovy.
Hello and welcome to another brand new episode of Oh, the Horror. It's a horror movie podcast where we take a look at classic and modern horror films from an expert and a newbie's perspective. I'm the not sick, finally back to his working self newbie, Steve Allman.
And I'm the still here, Rob Holmes.
The always here. Excellent minisode, by the way.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks.
Rob taking over the reins of the show for a brief moment while I was A, out of town, and B, completely useless in regards to my voice.
Yeah, it was amusing talking to you for that short amount of time.
It was there for like 3 days.
Yeah?
I could not speak. It could have been like some sort of acute laryngitis or something. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I'm completely fine now. Everything's good. I can speak now. And for your benefit, or probably not, we're all here.
Yeah, no, it's good to have you back, man.
And this week we are taking a look at an interesting one, a surprising one at that. That is 2017's The Babysitter, directed by Mick G.
Yeah,
of all people.
This film kind of came out of nowhere. Like, I ended up seeing it appear on Netflix and thought, sure, what the hell? You know, I'll give it a shot. I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised. I really had a lot of fun with this movie.
I want to kind of preface my, at least, there's a history that I have with Mick G. Not so much that, like, I particularly despise his work or anything.
Right, right.
But you can't say that the man doesn't have a certain predisposition, I'll say, to certain types of work. If you were to even glance at his IMDb page, you would find it pretty entertaining, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. There's some okay stuff, and then there's a lot of like questionable stuff. There's like one or two good movies. We got like We Are Marshall on there. That's solid, you know.
Did not know he directed like 4 Smash Mouth videos back in the day.
Right, and some Sugar Ray videos as well.
Sugar Ray, The Offspring. This guy basically was the early 2000s to late 90s.
No, definitely late 90s. Bare Naked Ladies, like, oh, yeah.
But like a crazy pedigree of movies that he's directed. Like, just briefly touching on Charlie's Angels,
right?
Charlie's Angels 2.
Which hold on before we even go further than that. Like, Charlie's Angels, it came out, it was fine, right? Then Charlie's Angels 2 comes out, and
Charlie's Angels is actually quite fun.
Right. But the second one is so bad and so off the rails that you're like, no, this obviously had to have been someone else who directed this movie. It couldn't.
Oh no,
have been
same,
the
guy.
Same guy.
Same guy.
Oh.
So, not exactly like the strongest track record, you'd say.
No, not even close.
But he has a weird passion for the stuff that he does. He's like, if I were to describe his style, it's, I would say, cartoony, over the top.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, you know, for better or worse, like that definitely. And bringing it back home, this definitely translates to The Babysitter, which essentially is, I feel it's billed as a horror comedy, but I could find elements of both, but man, I like, for some reason, I don't feel like he was taking either of those materials too seriously. And I think
that's kind of the point, and that's why I personally had fun with it, because to me it was going back to the roots of like a 1980s splatter horror film where it's just meant to be goofy and ridiculous and you're supposed to have fun with it, so it has like a rewatchability to it.
I understand. I completely understand. And the premise and plot, while solid enough, really kind of relies on, I think, the execution of that dialogue, and I think it tries to coast on a lot of charm, this movie.
Well, and this movie has a lot of charm. Like, I mean, basically,
it does.
Like, the character of Bea, played by Samara Weaving, she's awesome in this movie. Like, her introduction is not what you would expect from this type of film normally. So I find that it subverts a lot of expectations when you go into it. Like, it kind of, you know, you're expecting her to be, you know, the traditional babysitter character, and she's just fucking awesome right away.
Yeah, it's interesting. I found, like, little reminiscent of, oh, goodness, I'm blanking now, but it was that Megan Fox movie back in the day. Now, again, that was a bad movie, but it was that kind of, like...
Jennifer's Body?
Jennifer's Body, but it was, like, that weird, like, kind of mid-teens, like, that older teenage girl is, like, very much in control of this situation.
Sure, sure, but I believe it in this film.
Oh, yeah, no, you believe it in this one. Like, again, I'm not pimping up Jennifer's Body for anything.
Yeah, okay.
The idea of, like, her character's allure kind of has that thing where, like, she is very much in control of what's going on, even though you may or may not, like, you know, if that may not be that way. But we have what is essentially a coming-of-age hero's kid's tale of overcoming your fears and, you know, learning to be brave and stuff like that. And stuff like that equates pretty well, but... I think overall, like, there were quite a few things that annoyed me with it, and it was mainly due to, like, some performances and weird things that a few.
Okay,
just
yeah, no, we gotta talk about this. Wait, which performances in particular?
Mainly King Bosch,
Andrew Batchelor, John was great. He was so ridiculous.
I don't know. I just found him very annoying.
I thought John was great. I thought it was a good comic relief. It kept it in its absurd, as you know, it kept it absurd. But then having him, then he gets hit in the face twice with blood, so he always is getting hit with shit. And then he ends up tripping over the car.
His kill was very fun. I will say that. His kill was very fun.
Ridiculous, because you're like, okay, he's gonna fall. Oh, wow, he smashed his head. Oh, he smashes it again, and trophy through the neck.
See, that's the thing. I'm like, this fall's not going to kill him. Oh, that's going to kill him.
And it just goes all the way through, like, tears his neck completely open. See, that's where I had fun with this movie, because it was willing to go there. Like, when Robbie Amell's character, Max, throws that fireplace poker straight through the cop's head and then just rips it open. I was like, that this movie's ridiculous.
And again, with the absurdity, like, when she gets shot in the boob and, like, she goes flying across the room, like,
which
cartoonishly
I love that, man. I love that type of stuff. I like it when it's kind of over the top and ridiculous. And I just
thought, Tarantino-esque just body shot.
Yeah. But then seeing afterwards, like, her reaction to it was so ridiculous, because it's not like, oh, I've been shot, I'm dying. It's, no, you shot me in the boob. Who's ever going to want to be with me again because I've been shot in the boob?
Right, yeah, and it, like, that's, like, kind of, like, funny and childish. Like, it wasn't landing with me until maybe, like, the midway point. Let's get into a bit more of the nuanced parts of the plot.
Sure.
For like summation purposes, because I got a few things beforehand.
Okay, so we're gonna get into the plot. So Cole, his parents are going away. To kind of, I guess, hook up,
rekindle their marriage,
right? And Cole is kind of he's kind of a loser kid. He doesn't have a lot of friends. He does have that friend Melanie, who's obviously into him, and he's just like oblivious to it. B, his babysitter, is kind of his only other friend. Well, you know, he goes to sleep one night or whatever and stays up because he wants to find out what she does after he goes to bed. And what she does is she has a cult of friends over, and they end up sacrificing somebody with some weird blood ritual so they can get whatever wishes or desires they want by doing this pact with the devil.
They get one wish.
They get one wish, and it's kind of crazy. Like, you know, she's making out with this Samuel kid, or kisses him, whatever, and the next thing you know, he's got two knives in his skull. And
hate it when that happens.
Talks about his porpoise.
Right. So, his porpoise.
His porpoise.
So now it's a very fun and like cheeky introduction to, like, oh god, this is not at all what it seems to be, and I think it gets into an interesting dynamic with all of her friends, because all of her friends are kind of morons.
Well, they're all stereotypes. Like, everything is right. The epitome. Like, you have, you know, Max is the jock character. Sonia is the art kid. Allison is the cheerleader, you know? And it's just everybody has their own thing. And then John, he says he's aspiring to be, like, I think an artist, like a hip-hop artist or something, because he's talking about how his album's going to drop and go platinum. So everybody is kind of like in their own, they have the one thing about them that really defines them in this film. And I feel like it's a parody of a lot of stuff that you see in the 80s, but I find that this is done very well, and I just have a lot of fun with it the whole way throughout, because each person's death is kind of like a small scenario built out to fit their character.
Sure, and while I like that and I can find that fun sometimes, I feel like when I see caricatures of those stereotypes or those tropes played out so on the nose in a time where, like, we're very aware of that sort of thing in modern films and modern horror films, I kind of expect them to kind of turn those things on their ear at some point. I think Cabin in the Woods is kind of a prime example of how it made an entire movie out of that, but like to a lesser extent, like, okay, like, play with the formula a little bit. And I don't think it really tried that much, but that, like, we have one performance that actually, Max, that was quite interesting, at the midway point as to why he kind of turned that on its head. But I think that had the most, like, depth from a stereotype tropey character.
Yeah, I think his, out of all of the cult minus B, I would say B and Max are the most interesting of the cult characters.
Max is just weird. I found Max to be just very weird and psycho.
No, he's definitely psycho. I mean, he even says that, you know, he came here to kill people. Like, I guess that's, I don't know what his wish is, because they kind of delve into what people want, and then you don't find out what other people want. But with him, I guess it dealt with something like that. But then at the same time, it's like he's seeing this kid like a little brother almost, or like the little kid he wants to help out and be the mentor to, but at the end of the day, he's going to kill him because he wants to.
Well, so each of these scenarios that kind of come up to, like, sort of test Cole's resolve and, like, kind of get him to be braver is like, okay, so B tells the rest of the group, oh, it's fine, he's knocked out, I put a bunch of drugs in his drink, he's going to be completely knocked out. But so he's got a fake being asleep this entire time, and like, as they try to extract the blood from his vein, like they couldn't quite get it and all that stuff. But then, like, you see B realize that he, like, the window's open, he tried to escape clearly, but she's also kind of, like, proud, or like, okay, props to you for trying to pull a fast one on me. Like, and it's an interesting, like, sort of, like, push and pull of, we should kill you, we're gonna kill you, but also, like, you know, good on you, you're growing out of your skin right now. Like, that's good. And I'm like, what balance are you striking right now? Like, are you trying to be the big brothery type to this? And, like, Max could just be written off as crazy, but B's relationship to Cole is weird, I found, as well.
Well, I feel like B and Cole genuinely get along with each other, and...
Well, they do, and it's proven before all of this shit goes down.
Right,
like,
so
they actually
see,
have a genuine friendship.
Right, and I think, like, when they're talking about who he would take on for their mission into battle, like, who would be their ultimate crew, it's really cool to listen to how they banter with each other, and you're getting this real camaraderie with each other. That in the end, you know, when she even says, like, look, let's just go away together and do this, we'll just be partners in crime type thing as we, you know, get whatever it is that we want in our lives, I feel like there's a point where she actually would do that with him, because she actually does care about him. But the weird fact of the matter is that she's done this before. There have been other kids, and there have been other things. So I'm thinking that she's, because you wonder, it is like, what is it about her that she has to do this? Because that means she's done this ritual multiple times.
Right. And I feel like the main way that this kind of plays into Cole's inherent struggle with, like, you know, bravery and growing up and all that stuff, is that he's clearly enamored with B in the beginning. Well, yeah. Like, he has a giant crush on her.
Oh, absolutely.
And, like, and we can, and for better or worse, we kind of see B play with that, like play toy with him because she knows that. And I kind of wanted to, because, and we as the audience clearly could see that, I kind of wanted him to overcome that the most and see how toxic and deadly that friendship is. And more or less he did. But it's interesting to see how he clearly wouldn't just, like, I mean, if we were to quick jump to the end, just to leave her to die rather than, like, be like, no, fuck you. You're not going to do this again. Like, I wanted him to lash out in anger to that.
Yeah, but at the same time, I liked where it went, because normally in a film, someone would lash out in anger and they would have this huge, you know, crying fest and they would, you know. So I liked the way it went. Yeah, I think, I mean, and the thing about B's character is that, you know, at the end of it, you know, she talks about how she's done this before. See, I think her wish was to be, like, immortal or something, and she is way older than she says she is.
That's the thing. She probably is way older than she says she is.
Or, like, she just wants to be. Yeah, she just wants to be a teenager forever, and that's her thing.
Yeah,
she's got young forever.
The demon blood flowing through her and eternal life and all that stuff. Like, she could be hundreds of years old for all we know.
Yeah, and that I think is really cool. And, you know, they delve into that a bit, and they leave it open for a sequel, which is awesome. Now, the one thing that gets me about this film, that I don't know how no character notices it, but I noticed it throughout the entire movie. Samara Weaving, like, when you see B at certain points, she looks totally normal, and then crazy eyes appear just out of nowhere. And then I'm like, holy crap. And she does it a few times in the movie where you're watching it and it's like everything seems normal. Crazy eyes. And I'm like, what?
And for the most part, it seems to be just the thing that this actress is doing. Like, she just kind of turns it on, and I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, and the thing is, that's not, like, I've seen other movies with her in it, like Mayhem, Joe Lynch film, which is really solid. I recommend that to anybody out there as well. She doesn't really do any of that, you know? So it's definitely not, I guess, basic characteristic. So it was definitely something used for this film. And it's subtle stuff like that that I like. I think they really had a lot of layering and built a world in with this film. Like, especially when it came down to the bully, you know, where, like, Cole is getting beaten up and you get to see how that happens and how his daily life unfolds. Like, what does he do with his time? You get a more developed character that way. And then, you know, you get to see his interaction with B for a while, and you're like, oh, this is how they are together. This is really cool. Which makes, you know, what happens afterwards so much fun.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. I think the sort of the weirdest turn and the turn in the movie that I got the most intrigued by was was his interaction with Max. Because, like, because this is at the part where, like, B's kind of, like, out of the picture for a second, and Max is just giving chase.
Yeah, she's gone for, like, 20 minutes of the movie, basically, just for these set-piece moments to kind of build up Cole as a character, kind of get his confidence up, which, you know, he ends up blowing up Sonya, which kind of, in a weird way, you know, gets him to grow up a bit more for having to deal with confrontation and having to go under, you know, into the crawl space with those spiders and conquer his fears and, like, you know, really take a chance. And I love that part, because I think that's really great, and it's its own moment. And then you have the Max moment of him. It's strange because it's like Max is almost a mentor to him in this moment, but he's also the bully that that Cole has to stand up to as well, even though Cole has already failed with his own
and
bully.
That's,
you know?
And that's what, in a way, it throws me for a loop very quickly.
Yeah.
Where he stops giving chase to him and be like, no, you got to stand up for yourself.
But I think that's great. Like, that to me is an awesome moment in the film. Like, when he stands
And you got to, like, die like a man. And he's enforcing it in a way that, like, he's projecting some shit onto him that, like, is probably some issues that his character had.
Right. So, like, when he stands up to Jeremy finally and tries to do the scene from Billy Jack, and it does not go well at all.
Right. No, it does not. Like, to something from egging his house, and he just, like, you know, gets humiliated and ridiculed again.
And just gets literally egg in the face. it's such a funny moment, though. And, like, Jeremy is a great bully. He is, like,
he's a very good bully.
He's a very fun, ridiculous bully. Not extremely threatening, just more, like, really amusing.
He's just an asshole. He's just an asshole
who's really good at humiliating people. And it was that whole scene was fun. And then, you know, at the end, having his bike get hit, which is kind of like, I forget what his name is for his bike, like Carly or something like that. And it gets hit at the end, and it's like, or first it gets, you know, stabbed in the beginning by B, and it's like, I don't know. It's a cool little bookend.
Seeing his bike
get messed up twice because, you know, he messed with Cole.
It's a nice little bow it puts on that little to do.
Yeah, and it's the small stuff like that that I think really makes the movie awesome. And then we haven't even talked about the mom and dad, Leslie Bibb, Ken Marino. Like, those were two.
Ken Marino, always loved Ken Marino.
Yeah,
love
and Leslie Bibb is great in it too. I mean, it's just really cool to see them in these roles. You know, it's very light supporting role, but it helped to make the world feel fully fleshed out, you know, and that was extremely important with this, because once it gets, the ball gets rolling, stuff picks up and it kind of gets crazy. So yeah,
but I mean, yeah, I think of note, I think that the main things that I think the movie's fine. It feels weirdly odd and like pacing wise for me.
Okay. For me. Yeah, totally.
And it sends me off kilter at times, but there, every once in a while, there are pockets of these really great, solid interactions. It's a pretty solid, if not predictable, premise, but like, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I wanted to script doctor the last 20 minutes just to like tighten that up, because it got weird towards the end. Like, it ends in a great, like, nice little package with B, like, is she alive? Is she, like, she's still back on the attack or whatever? Everything's like resounded pretty well. It's just like, I don't know. Something about it was not working for me. And what I will say, props to the actor that plays Cole. Awesome performance. B, stellar. She steals the whole movie, as she should, because she's a great standout. I think the Max character is very interesting. I think that's the one time that you see a twist on the jock character, because like, it's the joke of him just being with his shirt off because he's jacked. It doesn't matter. But like, the first question is why is his shirt off? It's like, I wasn't like,
yeah, and I like how
he's
they're
very
like,
accusatory.
Yeah, I like how they're like, wait, that's your first question?
That's the problem. Why is his shirt off? And I'm like, well, it's a question. It is a question. But I think Max is probably the one time that I saw that sort of that tropey thing being played on its ear, because he got so involved in Cole's actual journey. Like, he wanted him to die like a man, or like have some sort of like catharsis before fulfilling like his poipus.
Yeah,
if you could say that. And I was like, okay, like this is interesting. Like, if it's his weird psycho brain, or if he actually wanted to help, like, that's one thing. But that's the most nutritional value, I'll say, that I got out of this movie. I think that's the most thing that I took away from that.
Yeah, see, first time I saw this, I've seen it now three times. First time I saw it, yeah, I liked it a lot, but there were certain things that kind of bothered me. You know, some of the deaths were a little lackluster, right? Most of them were really awesome, so you get some crazy deaths, and then Max's was just kind of like, oh, he just slipped and he broke his
neck.
Yeah,
he kind of like ending of Tarzan's for that one.
Yeah,
it was for Tarzan, I guess, but it was just magic noose falling from a tree.
Right. It was just, you know, it got tied around his neck and it, you know, he ended up breaking his neck. I wanted something a little bigger and crazier than what we got for that. So And maybe the same thing with Sonya's death, because like you don't really see anything that's happening. You just kind of hear it, and then you hear the "I'm still alive" and the explosion, but you never really see any of the results, right? And this movie is all about showing that already, because it's proven that with many of the other scenes. So I was kind of expecting that. And then, you know, after dealing with that, which, you know, I was fine with, it's not that big of a deal. You know, I watched it again when we talked about doing this for this week. And I was like, no, man, this movie is a lot. I really appreciate where they go with it and why they do what they do. Maybe, you know, with some of the kills a little bit, I understand where they're going with it. And then I watched it a third time. And okay. Yeah, no,
you gave this a wide berth, huh?
Dude, I did, because the more you watch it, the more fun it is. You just got to, you know, it's like you're not in control of the movie. It can't be everything that you want it to be perfectly, but I appreciate everything it does. And I have a lot. The more I watch it, the more I find these little small things that they've like planted throughout the film where I'm like, oh wow, this all really does tie together. And they just have fun with it. And it does kind of get ridiculous. You get some POV shots, you get some of the, you know, dolly shots, or, you know, where the camera's like in front of him and moving with him. You get a bunch of crazy techniques. You get some weird fonts and stuff coming up and stuff like that with the little, like when Picard and all and Kirk and all the names pop up and everything. Like, it looks really cool. I like those when they do that play with the fonts and things. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, there's a lot of creative flair.
Yeah,
coming out
and
of this movie.
And when you mix it all together, that's what I think makes this movie so much fun and a blast throughout, because they don't do it all the way through constantly, but they put it in here and they put it in there, and it doesn't really outstay its welcome. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a very, very lean, like, 80 minutes of a movie. Like,
hell
it's,
yeah, man.
It's not even peaking at an hour and a half. This goes.
Well, that's what you don't waste time on, you know, a ton of expository, man. Films waste 40, 45 minutes on just people talking about nothing that matters, because all those characters are going to get killed off anyway. So it doesn't even matter. But they waste their time on that. And then you have another lackluster 20 or 30 minutes and you're like, all right, that was a waste. But this film just like gets into it and it doesn't let up. And those are the types of films that I really enjoy. They're lean and mean and just get right to the point.
And that's good. Like, that's the thing. I didn't have much to complain about because it did not even last that long. To sum up here, I think I would let you, yeah, it's worth a watch. Sure.
Yeah, because it's totally worth a watch. Or two or three.
Of course, or two or three. What are you going to do on a Sunday? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. I found it not to be at, like, all the things that you loved, I didn't just tend to love as much. I'll say.
Sure. I can totally understand that.
It's not resonating with me like as much as it does. And maybe it's like my clearly inherent bias towards McGee, or I just really wanted this to be Charlie's Angels 3.
Well, I mean, in a way
it is. In a way, Terminator Salvation is Charlie's Angels 3. So
fair enough.
Fair enough. All right. So that's going to do it for us this week on Oh the Horror. Thanks again so much for listening to us. If you want to give us a review on iTunes or wherever you like to review your podcast, that would very much help out the show as well. You can get in touch with us on Twitter, on Facebook, and on email at ohthehorrorcast@gmail.com. Well, Rob, what are we going to be listening to or reviewing next week?
For next week, we are going to be talking about the Netflix film The Ritual, which just came out, I think, about a week or two ago.
Yeah, it looks pretty neat. And if you got those Netflix streamings, this is going to be an easy one for you. You don't have to do anything else.
Exactly. So, if you guys haven't watched it yet, watch that. We will do the same, and we will be back next week to talk about The Ritual. So, once again, thanks, guys, for listening to the podcast, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
Come, it is time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.